Chapter 34. A Cup of Cough. Ferik Karid pressed his gauntleted fist to his heart, returning the sentry's salute, and ignored the fact that the man spat as he rode past. He hoped the 80 men and 21 Ogier behind him ignored it too. They had better, if they knew what was good for them. He was here for information, and a killing would make getting it more difficult. Since his manservant Ajimbura had planted his knife in a standard-bearer's heart over a perceived insult to his master, in truth a real insult, but Ajimbura should have held his temper the way he himself had. Since then he had taken to leaving the wiry little hill tribesmen in the forest with the Suldam and Damani and some of the guards to watch over the pack horses when he entered a camp. He had come a long way from Ebu Dar chasing the wind, almost 4 weeks of harrying after rumors, until the news brought him here to this camp in east-central Altara. The neat rows of pale tents and horse lines stood in a forest clearing large enough for Rakan to land. But there was no sign of Rakan or flyers, no ground company with its wagons and Rakan grooms. But then, he had not seen a Rakan in the skies for some time now. Supposedly, almost all had been sent west. Why, he did not know and did not care. The High Lady was his goal and his entire world. A tall, thin message pole cast its long shadow in the early morning sun, though, so there must be Rakan somewhere about. He thought the camp might contain 1,000 men, not counting farriers and cooks and the like. Interestingly, every last soldier he could see wore familiar armor from home, rather than those solid breastplates and barred helmets. Practice was to pad out most forces with men from this side of the ocean. It was interesting that they were all armored, too. A rare commander kept his soldiers in armor, unless he expected action soon. From the rumors he had picked up, that might be the case here. Three flagstaffs marked the command tent, a tall, walled affair of pale canvas with air vents along the peak that doubled as smoke holes. No smoke issued from them now, for the morning was only a little cool, though the sun hung not far above the horizon. On one flagstaff, the blue-bordered imperial banner hung in limp folds, hiding the spread-winged golden hawk clutching lightning in its talons. Some commanders hung it from a horizontal staff, so it was always visible in full, but he thought that ostentatious. The other two banners, on shorter flanking staffs, would be of the regiments these men belonged to. Karid dismounted in front of that tent and removed his helmet. Captain Musenge emulated him, revealing a grim expression on his weathered face. The other men climbed down, too, to rest their horses and stood by their animals. The Ogier gardeners leaned on their long-hafted, black-tasseled axes. Everyone knew they would not be staying long. "Keep the men out of trouble," he told Musenge. "If that means accepting insults, so be it." "There'd be fewer insults if we killed a few of them," Musenge muttered. He had been in the Death Watch Guards even longer than Karid, though his hair was unbroken black, and he would suffer insults to the Empress, might she live forever, as gladly as insults to the guards. Hartha scratched one of his long gray mustaches with a finger the size of a fat sausage. The first gardener, commander of all the Ogier and the High Lady Tuan's bodyguard, was almost as tall as a man in the saddle and wide with it. His red and green lacquered armor contained enough steel to make armor for 3 or 4 humans. His face was as dour as Musenge's, yet his booming voice was calm. Ogier were always calm, except in battle. Then they were as cold as deep winter in Jeranem.
"After we rescue the High Lady, we can kill as many of them as need killing, Musenge."
Recalled to his duty, Musenge flushed from having allowed himself to stray.
"After," he agreed.
Karid had schooled himself too hard over the years, had been schooled too hard by his trainers to sigh, but had he been other than a Death Watch guard, he might have done so now. Not because Musenge wanted to kill someone, and almost anyone would do. Rather, it was because the insults he had walked away from these past weeks chafed him as much as they did Musenge and Hartha. But the guards did whatever was necessary to carry out their assignments, and if that meant walking away from men who spat on the ground at the sight of armor in red and the dark green most called black, or dared to murmur about lowered eyes in his hearing, then walk away he must. Finding and rescuing the High Lady Tuan was all that mattered. Everything else was dross beside that. Helmet under his arm, he ducked into the tent to find what must have been most of the camp's officers gathered around a large map spread out on a folding camp table. Half wore segmented breastplates lacquered in horizontal red and blue stripes, the other half red and yellow. They straightened and stared when he walked in. Men from Koweal or Dalinshar, with skin blacker than charcoal. Honey-brown men from Nakone. Fair-haired men from Achakan. Pale-eyed men from Elkam. Men from every part of the Empire. Their stares held not the wariness often tinged with admiration that he had always been used to, but very nearly challenges. It seemed everyone believed the filthy tale of guards' involvement with a girl pretending to be the High Lady Tuan and extorting gold and jewels from merchants. Likely they believed that other whispered tale about the girl, not merely vile but horrific. No. That the High Lady was in danger of her life from the ever-victorious army itself went beyond horrific. That was a world gone mad. "Ferek Karid," he said coolly. His hand wanted to go to his sword hilt. Only discipline kept it at his side. Discipline and duty. He had accepted sword thrusts for duty. He could accept insults for it. "I wish to speak to the commander of this camp." For a long moment, the silence stretched. "Everybody out!" a tall, lean man barked at last in the sharp accents of Dalinshar. The others saluted, gathered their helmets from another table, and filed out. Not one offered Karid a salute. His right hand twitched once, feeling a phantom hilt against his palm, and was still. "Gamel Luna," the lean man introduced himself. Missing the top of his right ear, he had a slash of solid white there through his tight black curls and flecks of white elsewhere. "What do you want?" There was the barest touch of wariness in that. A hard man and self-controlled. He would have had to be to earn the three red plumes decorating the helmet atop his sword rack. Weak men without mastery of themselves did not rise to banner general. Karid suspected the only reason Luna was willing to talk to him was that his own helmet bore three black plumes. "Not to interfere in your command." Luna had cause to fear that. Ranks in the Death Watch Guard stood half a step higher than those outside. He could have co-opted the man's command had he needed to, though he would have been required to explain his reasons later. They would have had to be good reasons for him to avoid losing his head. "I understand there have been difficulties in this part of Altara recently. I want to know what I am riding into." Luna grunted. "Difficulties? That's one word for it." A stocky man in a plain brown coat, a narrow beard dangling from the point of his chin, entered the tent, carrying a heavily carved wooden tray with a silver pitcher and two sturdy white cups, the sort that would not break easily while being carried about in wagons. The scent of freshly brewed cough began to suffuse the air. "Your cough, Banner General." Setting the tray on the edge of the table holding the map, he carefully filled one cup with the black liquid while watching Karid from the corner of his eye. Somewhere in his middle years, he wore a pair of long knives at his belt, and his hands had a knifeman's calluses. Karid sensed close kin to Ajimbura, in spirit but not in blood. Those dark brown eyes never came from the Kainsada Hills. "I waited till the others left, since there's hardly enough for you anymore. Don't know when I'm going to get more, I don't."
"Will you take cough, Karid?"
Luna's reluctance was obvious, but he could hardly fail to offer. For an insult that large, Karid would have been forced to kill him. Or so the man would think.
"With pleasure," Karid replied.
Placing his helmet alongside the tray, he doffed his steel-backed gauntlets and laid them beside it. The serving man filled the second cup, then started toward a corner of the tent. But Luna said,
"That will be all for now, Mentual."
The stocky man hesitated, eyeing Karid, before making a bow to Luna, touching eyes and lips with his fingertips and departing. Mantual is overprotective of me, Luna explained. Clearly, he did not want to explain, but he did want to avoid what might be taken for open insult. Odd fellow. Attached himself to me years ago, in Pujili. Wormed his way into becoming my manservant. I think he'd stay if I stopped paying him. Yes, very close kin to Ajimbura. For a time they simply sipped cough, balancing the cups on fingertips and enjoying the pungent bitterness. It seemed to be a pure Ijaz Mountains brew, and if so, very expensive. Karid's own supply of black beans, most definitely not Ijaz Mountains, had run out a week ago, and he had been surprised at how much he missed having cough. He never used to mind going without anything at need. The first cups done, Luna refilled them. "You were going to tell me about the difficulties?" Karid prompted, now that conversation would not be impolite. He always tried to be polite, even with men he was going to kill, and rudeness here would dam up the man's tongue. Luna set his cup down and leaned his fists on the table, frowning at the map. Small red wedges supporting tiny paper banners were scattered across it, marking Seanchan forces on the move, and red stars indicating forces holding in place. Little black disks marking engagements peppered the map, but strangely, no white disks to indicate the enemy. None. "Over the last week," Luna said, "there have been 4 sizable engagements and upwards of 60 ambushes, skirmishes, and raids. Many quite large, all spread out across 300 miles. That encompassed almost the entire map. His voice was stiff. Plainly given a choice, he would have told Karid nothing. That half-step gave him none, however. "There must be 6 or 8 different armies involved on the other side. The night after the first large engagement saw 9 major raids, each 40 to 50 miles from the site of the battle. Not small armies, either, or at least not taken altogether. But we can't find them, and nobody has any eyeless idea where they came from. Whoever they are, they have Damani, those Aes Sedai, with them, and maybe those cursed Ashaman. Men have been torn apart by explosions our Damani say weren't caused by the power." Karid sipped his cough. The man was not thinking. If the enemy had Aes Sedai and Ashaman, they could use a thing called traveling to move as far as they wished in a step. But if they could do that, why had they not used it to step all the way to safety with their prize? Perhaps not all Aes Sedai and Ashaman could travel, yet that begged another question. Why had they not sent those who could? Maybe the only Aes Sedai were the Damani stolen from the Terrasen Palace. Reportedly, none of them had had any idea how to travel. That made sense. "What do the prisoners say about who sent them?" Luna's laugh was bitter. "Before you can have eyeless prisoners, you need an eyeless victory. What we've had are a string of eyeless defeats." Picking up his cup, he took a sip. His voice loosened as if he had forgotten the colors of Karid's armor. He was just a soldier talking his trade now. "Gurat thought he had some of them 2 days ago. He lost 4 banners of horse and 5 of foot almost to the last man. Not all dead, but most of the wounded are the next thing to it, pincushioned with crossbow bolts. Mostly Terrabanners and Amadisians, but that isn't supposed to matter, is it? Had to be 20,000 or more crossbowmen to put out that volume. 30,000, maybe. And yet they managed to hide from the Marat Rakan. I know we've killed some, the reports claim it, at least, but they don't even leave their dead behind. Some fools have begun whispering that we're fighting spirits." Fools he might consider them, but the fingers of his left hand hooked in a sign to ward off evil. "I'll tell you one thing I know, Karid. Their commanders are very good. Very, very good. Every man to face them has been fought off his feet, outmaneuvered and outfought completely. Kareed nodded thoughtfully. He had speculated that the White Tower must have tasked one of its best to kidnap the High Lady Tuon, but he had not been thinking along the lines of what people this side of the ocean called the Great Captains. Perhaps Tom Marilyn's real name was Agilmar Jigad, or Gareth Bryn. He looked forward to meeting the man, not least to ask him how he had known she would be coming to Abu Dhar. He might hide Surath's involvement, but then again he might not. On the heights, today's ally could be tomorrow's sacrifice. Except for the gardeners, the Death Watch guards were Dakovale to the Empress herself, might she live forever, yet they lived on the heights.
There must be some plan for finding them and pinning them. Are you in charge of it?
No, praise be to the light, Luna said fervently.
He took a long drink as though wishing it were brandy.
General Chison is bringing his entire army back through the Melvidi Narrows. Apparently the Terrasen Palace decided this was important enough to risk thrusts out of Mirandi or Andor, though from what I've heard, neither one is capable of striking at anyone at the moment. I just have to wait here until Chison arrives. We'll see a different result then, I think. More than half Chison's men will be veterans from home.
Abruptly, Luna seemed to recall who he was talking to. His face turned to dark wood, a hard mask. It did not matter. Kareed was convinced this was the work of Marilyn or whatever his name was, and he knew why the man was doing what he was doing. Under different circumstances, he would have told Luna his reasoning, but the High Lady would not be safe until she was back in the Terrasen Palace among those who knew her face. If the man failed to believe him on the key point, that she was the High Lady, he would have increased her danger for nothing.
I thank you for the cough, he said, setting the cup down and taking up his helmet and gauntlets. The light see you safe, Luna. We will meet in Shandar some day. The lights see you safe, Kareed, Luna said after a moment, plainly surprised by the polite farewell. We will meet in Shandar some day.
The man had shared Karf, and Kareed had no quarrel with him. Why should he be surprised? Kareed did not speak to Musenge until they had ridden out of the camp, the Ogier gardeners striding along just ahead of the human guards. Hartha was walking on Kareed's other side, his long axe propped on his shoulder, his head nearly level with theirs.
We head northeast, he said, for the Melvidi Narrows.
If he remembered the maps correctly, and he seldom forgot any map he had more than glimpsed, they could reach it in 4 days.
The light shine on us that we arrive before the High Lady.
If they did not, the pursuit would continue, all the way to Tar Valon, if necessary. The thought of turning back without the High Lady never occurred to him. If he had to bring her out of Tar Valon, he would.